This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
Running a business comes with a lot of what-ifs. But luckily, there's a simple answer to them. Shopify. It's the commerce platform behind millions of businesses, including Thrive Cosmetics and Momofuku. And it'll help you with everything you need. From website design and marketing to boosting sales and expanding operations, Shopify can get the job done and make your dream a reality. Turn those what-ifs into sign up for your $1 per month trial at shopify.com/special offer.
Welcome to One Nation. I'm Brian Kilmeade. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. We're going to end it strong. Guess who's with us today? Tristan Harris here. He wants to unwind the dangers and the future for AI. You're going to want to hear every word he has to say. Victor Davis Hanson, military. Talk about what the new tone and texture is after Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War's big speech this week. Did we need it? Does Victor say yes? I do. And James Damoulian will give you new hope when it comes to millennials at 24 years old, already a millionaire. He can't wait to tell you why. But first, the fastest, most impactful monologue in America. You know, I think it's time for Democrats to rediscover rational politics. Is that too much to ask? There was a time when they actually made sense. If you could believe that, they once talked tough when it came to crime.
Or a portion of them will become the predators 15 years from now. And Madam President, we have predators on our streets. That society has, in fact, in part because of its neglect, created.
We have to make this work. If this law turns out to be just a law on the books that is widely ignored and never enforced, it will be a terrible shame because this law can save children's lives.
There was a time not a long time ago that they not only cracked down on crime, but they also wanted to crack down on illegal immigration.
Why can't you stop illegal immigrants or others from coming here? And the number one answer we give our constituents is when they come here, they can get jobs, get benefits against the law because of fraud. I urge support of this amendment.
Yep. Remember that guy? Remember when they actually were pro-Israel?
Now, the partnership between Israel and the United States will be the foundation from which our two countries together continue to build a comprehensive, lasting, and secure peace in the Middle East.
It's not the way most Democrats feel now. Something happened along the way. Dems are burning the very ground they used to stand on. And now, the biggest names in their party seem to be the most unhinged.
Fascist takeover, that's not a bad word. It's a fact.
Do I look like a member of the Third Reich to you, Ms. Tlaib?
Oh,
is that what I look
please.
Like to you?
You're the one taking your voting
Is that what you think? Is that what you think? Is that what you think?
No. That's
I think it's radical, and I think it's insane, and I'll respect everything that you say, but to say something like that to myself and all of my colleagues is way out of line. It's way out of line.
Totally out of control. It seems the loudest and the most proud are voicing a direction for America that nobody wants to go in. You have the screaming on the left for Palestine now.
It is part of the culmination of what I view to be genocide of Palestinian people.
Indiscriminate bombing with massive casualties among women and children is horrific, completely unacceptable.
Senators like Chris Van Hollen of Maryland chose to fight for an illegal immigrant who happens to be a wife beater, Kilmar Abrego Garcia. Yep, you have Democrats supporting issues they can't even explain themselves.
Here's what you say we ought to invest in. Instead of funding the police, Here's what we ought to invest in. We need to invest in programs that acknowledge the need for safe space initiatives led by lesbian, gay, bisexual, two-spirit, trans, and gender nonconforming people. What's two-spirit?
Well, look, I don't know exactly. You guys are pulling some interesting quotes.
This is from your report.
Yes, your report. Democrats are going to bat to keep anarchy in their streets. And when Trump tried to bring order to the streets, and he's doing that now, they choose to side with the chaos.
This is not about fighting crime or about public safety. This is about sowing fear and intimidation and division among Americans.
We cannot incarcerate our way out of violence. We've already tried that. Racist, it is immoral, it is unholy, and it is not the way to drive violence down.
He prefers a time when all the illegal immigrants were sleeping in his airports. Now they're trying to clean it up, and now Trump is the bad guy. They're not even condemning political violence.
It is a tragedy that Charlie Kirk was killed in that way. But there is no legacy to honor. It was a legacy filled with bigotry, hatred, and white supremacy.
It even hurts to hear that. Your upside-down policies are not just scaring me, it's scaring many in your own party.
How do you think the Democratic leaders are doing right now?
Not good enough. I don't feel that our leaders are doing what they need to do. And if you can't change the people, change the people.
If we are ever going to get back to the old America, that's got to be the Democrats' part of the bargain. Stop coming up with radically new and often terrible ideas, and then in the next breath, insist there be no debate about any of it.
There are, however, some voices who have issues over the idiocy. They want to tackle them. For example, Rahm Emanuel warning that it's time for a pullback on the pronouns and the bathroom policies and regain trust when it comes to education. Democrats used to be the party of education, not anymore. He said the Dems have to wake up because you are making yourselves, and he's saying this about his own party, virtually unelectable. Stop defending the indefensible because it sounds trendy in your echo chamber, and stop letting anarchists crowd out moderates. Republicans are relishing this moment and loving this political spectacle, thrilled to be the party of common sense while letting them own the nonsense. The GOP is loving it. I understand it. But as an American, I'm hating it because sometimes it's not about winning or losing. It's about having leaders, leaders who build, leaders who teach, who understand right from wrong. I am not suggesting that Democrats act like traditional Republicans. I'm not saying that. I want Democrats to go back to being proud of their country and want to condemn people that aren't like our don't like our country. That's what makes us great. Govern and tell you crazies to take a seat. Stop fighting for criminals and windmills and go to bat for your people, the American people. Or don't be surprised when the voters decide they've had enough of the drama and want to take their votes, normally that went to you, elsewhere. Joining us right now for more on this is Wall Street Journal opinion columnist, Fox News contributor Kim Strassel. Kim, your thoughts about the Democrats of today.
You know, you said something that was just so important at the end of that monologue, Brian, which is that the problem today is we used to believe, both Republicans and Democrats, in certain basic American principles, and the divide was over how best to get to them, okay? So you don't know. You, as a Democrat, do not have to be a Republican. But, you know, we used to all believe in the rule of law and no crime on the streets, and the fight was over how long we should keep people in jail for. We used to believe in a closed border. And the fight was over how many people to let in legally. Another one, we all used to believe that capitalism and entrepreneurialism was the heart of this country, the engine of so much of its success. And the divide was over how much to have government institute safety or environmental regulations to have some sort of monitor on business. Now you have Democrats that want government to run entire industries. They don't want to have a healthcare industry anymore. Government should do it. We've had Democrats crazy that are saying we should have government run all of our banking. And, I mean, nothing scary about that, right? But we need to get back to being and believing, as you said, in some of these major concepts and then fight along the edges of how we all get to a better American place of that we all believe in.
I mean, give, for example, Portland. We watch all week. They're harassing everyone coming in and out of the ICE building. They're trying to destroy the building. Instead, cops stand back. These anarchists, these Antifa members, it seems, are able to run rampant And there's no condemning it on the left. How could you possibly not side with ICE in this situation?
Brian, they won't even acknowledge there's a problem. This actually really bugs me. Oregon's my home state. You know, that ICE building in Portland has been under siege since early summer, with almost nightly protests, guys in Antifa riot gear, sending projectiles at times, rocks, fireworks, setting things on fire. The Portland police are so worried that if they engage, they've been basically given orders not to, and that if they do, they could get strung up on some sort of charges for violating civil rights. And even when they arrest people, the prosecutors just let them go. So this situation continues. And Portland and Oregon, both, they filed a lawsuit saying, we don't have any problem here. There's no violence. They won't even acknowledge there is an issue.
I just hope the American people, who aren't as politically inclined as you or I, understand who's right here. Something else is going on. The president's paying a lot of attention to Central and South America, and it's way overdue. You knew he was serious about it when he took on the Panama Canal and China's interest in it. And now he's had it with Maduro. He got F-35s and aircraft carriers seemingly off the coast. And he is tired of losing the war on drugs. So he's blowing up, and you're seeing this now, the latest video. A lot of these drug boats are heading to our shores. We sealed the border, but it wasn't enough. And now some people, he said that, by the way, the blowing up of this ship, say if this drugs on that ship got into our shores, would have killed between 25 and 50,000 Americans. But having said that, he's getting some pushback on both sides saying, hey, I'm not too sure that's constitutional. What are your thoughts?
Well, look, I think one of the best comments on this came from my colleague, Mary Anastasia O'Grady, who writes about this region. And she said, this is not your father's drug war, all right? And because back when we were really engaged last time in a drug war, it was about stopping the flow of drugs because they were illegal in the United States. That's now changed. We now have drugs that are coming in that are killing people right and left. It's obviously become a much greater problem. But here's the bigger thing, Brian, is that watch carefully because, you know, we had an FBI report earlier this year that suggested that a lot of these drug cartels are actually proxies for the Maduro government.
Yep.
And they're out there. And drugs are just a part of what they're doing. They're attempting to stage actions, sow destabilization in neighboring countries and in the United States. And if that's the case, the goal of going after this goes well beyond drugs. And there are some curious questions about the administration's own goals. If some of this isn't maybe to depose the Maduro government or certainly destabilize it itself and give Venezuela a chance to get back on its feet again.
Absolutely. And the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, who's also the National Security Advisor, knows this issue as well as anyone in our country. And I'm glad the president's letting him take the lead here. Kimberly Strassel, The Wall Street Journal, Fox News contributor, thanks so much. So President Trump giving our military a much-needed revamp, telling our military brass, focus on merit.
You're all based on merit. We're not going to have somebody taking your place for political reasons because they are politically correct, and you're not. My message to you is very simple. I am with you. I support you. And as president, I have your backs 100%.
Pretty extraordinary scene, right? Joining us now to take to put in perspective the military history of the U.S. fighting force, how we maybe got off track, and why that speech was necessary is Victor Davis Hanson of the Hoover Institute. Victor, do you think that that speech was necessary? And if so, do you believe that Secretary Hegseth and President Trump accomplished their goal?
Yeah, I think the people who write about it are angry, but the people who are not office, not the highest 1 to 4 star officers are very happy about it, because they know what has been going on, and they've been complaining. And I think they view the officer corps, unfortunately, as people who get promoted by being in the Washington corridor and bending or appeasing people in Congress that see the universe. They see the military as a fast track of social change. There's no debate. There's no vote. The chain of command can make instantaneous decisions, progressive decisions on social change. That's why the left has flipped. They used to dislike the military. Now they say, you know what? Trans, gays, any issue we want, we can get these generals, draw them up, and then they'll know who gets promoted on the basis of their compliance with progressive ideology.
Can't,
so that's
yeah.
what's happened.
And you can't,
I think,
yeah, you can't sanitize
yeah.
war. You're a military historian. It's ugly, it's horrible, but the people that are the toughest, strongest, and the best trained prevail. Here's more from the Secretary of War.
We must restore a ruthless, dispassionate, and common sense application of standards. I don't want my son serving alongside troops who are out of shape, or in combat unit with females who can't meet the same combat arms physical standards as men, or under a leader who was the first, but not the best. Standards must be uniform, gender neutral, and high.
We'll weave in some of the bullet points that the Secretary of War pointed out. But having to say that, I could not picture that speech being delivered 4 years ago. Has America changed?
No. Yeah, I think so. I think that's the point. They're telling the officer corps, the highest officer corps, that if you think you're going to get support from the American people for the DEI project, it's not there anymore. So you better comply, because not just that's the Pentagon position, but this is a new American people, and they don't want to put up with it anymore. I will say, though, in defense of the military, I don't think our problems in Afghanistan and Iraq were necessarily found in the combat units. I think they were found in the mission statement, the political boundaries that were put upon the soldiers, and the high command was not there. Really, their point was not victory at any cost. It was trying to comply with a mission statement from politicians that was impossible. You know, if you tell a general you got to get out of Afghanistan, leave everything behind, he should have resigned, whoever made that decision in Afghanistan. It wasn't the soldiers that did anything wrong. Mm-hmm. It was the generals who were telling us we're winning in Afghanistan, don't worry about it. And then they collapsed and they said, we'll just get out because Biden wants us to get out. No one said, I'm not going to get out and leave that equipment and leave our men vulnerable, and I will resign before I do that. But they don't do that. So I think the problem is in the highest command and the political machinery, not in the fighting people themselves necessarily. They fought very well. I was in Iraq twice as an embed, and I could not believe the heroism and valor of the troops there in an impossible situation, I'd say, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that's being buried, because you don't like the outcome. That's political. But the way they fought every battle and adapted to the battlefield in both areas while winning the war on terror, I think can't be overstated. The other thing I want to bring you to is the battle we're facing right now and the ability to supply Ukraine in their epic battle with Russia, now entering its third plus year. This week, we find out the president made it clear we're going to provide intelligence for Ukraine to hit inside Russia while considering the request of Tomahawks and Barracudas to hit 500 miles into Russia. The Russians have responded. Vladimir Putin says this is a qualitative new stage of escalation. Your thoughts?
Well, what Donald Trump is saying is we have to go back to strategic necessity. If this was just a war between two outside powers, strategic necessity says use every asset at your disposal. But we haven't been doing that because Russia is a nuclear power and we're a nuclear power, and this is a proxy war, and it's very dangerous. Now Trump is saying, I'm going to treat this like any other war, and I'm going to follow military logic because you escalated and you didn't want to negotiate, but you have one last chance. But I will say it's going to get more dangerous as both sides escalate. But it's strategically justified, but geostrategically, it's in dangerous territory.
Perhaps the most encouraging thing that's taken place is NATO got the memo. They are beginning to build up their defenses. Their drone shield is in the middle, and they're going to start building it all the way from Finland to Bulgaria. And it's no longer a favor for Donald Trump. They see it as their own national security. Victor Davis Hanson, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Meanwhile, I'm going to be talking about this and history and everything else on stage, Potsdam, Pennsylvania, History, Liberty, and Laughs as we come up to year 250, BrianKilmeade.com. And on this show, next, America is in a race against China for AI, but is coming in for first, the most important thing, beating them to the punch. Does it matter? Tristan Harris weighs in. And have you ever wanted to know the secrets to success? The School of Hard Knocks takes to the streets to ask the super wealthy how they got that way. The co-founder, James Damalian, coming up. Don't move.
How did you make your millions?
I'm an actor.
You're an actor?
Yeah.
You became one of the highest paid actors in television history.
So you do know who I am.
I do, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me ask you this. What was the biggest driving factor of your success throughout your career?
Don't let other people cancel your dreams because they never realize their own.
Nearly home.
China is competing with open weights and open training data, and the U.S. is largely and majority focused on closed weights, closed data. That means that the majority of the world, think of it as the Belt and Road Initiative, are going to use Chinese models and not American models. We better also be competing with the Chinese in day-to-day stuff. Their work ethic's incredible. They're well-funded. It's not the crazy valuations that we have in America.
Right.
They can't raise the capital, but they can win across that.
So that was former Google CEO Eric Schmidt sounding the alarm, warning about China's relentless work ethic and how they could, in fact, win the AI race. Are they ahead right now? They are setting a breakneck pace to beat the U.S., and we are the target, sparking real concern across the West. But our next guest says being first isn't what matters most. Getting it right is. After all, America was first on social media, and we're still struggling to rein it in. I'm sure you've noticed. Joining us now to discuss it, one of our favorite old-time guests, the Center for Humane Technology co-founder and the host of Your Divided, Undivided Attention, Tristan Harris. Tristan, great to see you.
Always good to be with you, Brian.
Your thoughts about what Eric just said.
Yeah, so I'm sure the American public wants to know, you know, we're in a race with China, but we beat China to social media, that technology. And as you said, did that make us stronger or weaker? We have the most anxious and depressed generation of our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually in a competition for who's better at deploying this technology in a way that strengthens your society. So, for example, as Eric said, actually, I think China is being better right now at applying the technology to get kind of more electric cars, more manufacturing, more advanced medical stuff, and applying it throughout their population. The U.S. right now is obsessed with building kind of a god in a box. We want to build super intelligence, but we're not so good at applying it to all these things in a healthy way. We're already seeing kids commit suicide because ChatGPT, Adam Rain, the 16-year-old, there was a lawsuit recently. ChatGPT went from homework assistant to suicide assistant within 6 months. That's a result of deploying this technology faster mm-hmm. than we can get it right. And who wins in the long run? The one who deploys it and makes every kid have their best friend and therapist, their AI that's causing them to commit suicide or drive them crazy or have attachment disorders?
Right.
Or is the society that's going to win the one that gets it right? We've got to be in a race to get it right.
But to be first at AI, do you still think it's the same formula as being first at social media? Because AI is the unproven frontier. Well, social media was a way to enhance our life. AI seems intent on changing our lives.
AI will change every aspect of our society. We talked about jobs in the break. What Americans need to know is that AI will lead to the most concentration of wealth and power we have ever seen. Think about it. If I'm a company,
yep.
I could pay my employee $100,000 a year. Or suddenly AI GPT-6 comes out and does everything that that employee could do. And I can just pay less than minimum wage to this AI that's going to work 24/7, won't whistleblow, don't have to pay for health care, doesn't complain. All the money is going to go funneled into 5 or 6 companies. Even Elon Musk said the Optimus robot alone
right.
is going to be a $25 trillion market cap product. What he says when he's saying that is we're going to own the labor economy. The question is, What about us? What are we going to do?
Are we already feeling it?
We're already feeling it. Already 13% of college or entry-level white-collar work
right.
is actually down, and college students are having a really hard time finding a job.
And just real quick, while we're on the topic, you think it's a huge mistake to allow NVIDIA to sell chips, even though it's not the highest-level chips,
yep.
to China? Because that's
do.
Our main advantage, it's and our, they can't replicate
exactly.
it.
That's our main advantage, Brian. So right now, China, they have more training data than we do because they just suck all the training data from their population. We have privacy laws. They have more energy build-out capacity. They can build energy faster than the U.S. has.
Right.
But they don't have the chips. We've got the chips, and I think giving them to China, it's sort of like, would you have us sell uranium and nuclear power plants to the rest of the world?
And you know the theory, though. The theory was they got to make their own. They'll never need us, and they'll be on their own. We won't be able to watch them. We have some type of control, but you don't think they can
no.
match these chips?
No.
Here's the good news, all right? So President Trump this week had a press conference to announce he's going to focus AI through an executive order on childhood cancer.
Yep.
Very moving, put $50 million into it. That's part of the good thing about AI, isn't
it? That's one of the good things. Yes, absolutely. AI will give us many cures for diseases at the same time that it causes us all these risks. I think people have a hard time, though, holding, you know, cures for cancer and new bioweapons in the same equation, right? Because the same AI that knows biology so well
right.
that it can come up with a cure for cancer knows biology so well that it can invent something new in biology that would be very dangerous.
And lastly, some blue-collar jobs are going to be available. Ford saying, hey, I'd like to build a huge plant, but I can't. I don't have plumbers. I don't have electricians.
Yep.
So I know Harvard was told, give me $500 million. I want you to have the Harvard trade schools. That's one of the things that people at home should know.
Yep.
We need those plumbers. We need the pipe fitters. We need the electricians.
We're going to need those ones. They're probably going to last longer, but eventually in the long run, AI will automate all kinds of labor, including that, too.
How do we get your podcast?
If you just Google for Your Undivided Attention, it's our podcast.
All right.
We'll learn more. Thank you so much, Ryan.
By the way, Tristan is the guy you'd go to find out what is next. That's including the highest level in AI. Tristan, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Brian.
You always do a great thing for everybody because we need to be educated on this. Meanwhile, next on One Nation, Carly Shimkus is in the house with the media moments that she say really matter.
Gotta get that boom, boom, that boom. Nice go.
Welcome to Fox News Live. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer in New York. The government shutdown is about to enter into its sixth day, and a deal to reopen it is nowhere in sight. President Trump says the Republicans are winning and remains confident in a positive outcome. The Democrats are pressuring Republicans to extend enhanced Obamacare subsidies and include it in any funding bill. The GOP, though, says the issue should wait until the end of the year. Meanwhile, Trump is threatening waves of layoffs on top of the federal workers already furloughed. And President Trump says U.S. forces hit another vessel allegedly carrying illegal drugs off the coast of Venezuela. He is warning his administration will now start looking at drug trafficking that is happening on land. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer, and I'm back to One Nation with Brian Kilmeade. For all of your headlines, log on to foxnews.com. You're watching the most powerful name in news, Fox News Channel.
Media moments that matter.
All right, it's time for our favorite segment of the week. I think it's America's favorite segment of the week. This week, I gave the VCR all my tape stock, the TV cords, and everything else to Carly Shimkus.
Hello.
And I asked her to watch everything possible as co-host of Fox and Friends. First, you have a busy schedule and Fox and Friends anchor. You have a busy schedule already. Were you able to watch anything?
I was. I felt like an electrician plugging it all in, but I got it done and I watched.
Fantastic. And what did you come up with?
Okay, so the New York City mayoral election is just around the corner. And our full-blown socialist candidate stopped by, did an interview with our Fox 5 affiliate, and he had some pretty interesting things to say about the police and prostitutes.
At one point, you wanted to defund the police. You called them racist. Then you said you would apologize. When will you apologize?
So these are the conversations I'm having with officers themselves. I think
so. It's not a formal apology. It's like one-on-one if you see somebody on the street.
It's in the conversations with the officers.
You have a bill in Albany that you're still supporting that would decriminalize prostitution.
So the platform that I have is the one that is on my website, ZahranForNYC.com. Those are the things that I am running on. This is a coalition that includes organizations and individuals of a wide variety, all of whom are united on affordability.
Do you support decriminalizing prostitution?
Yes, right now what we see in this moment is we have an approach that is not putting safety first.
What the
A hell? Lot to react to there, Ryan.
Yes, I mean, first off, defund the police, apologize for that. I'm going to make a formal speech about that. But if I run into a cop on the street, I'll engage them. I'm not even guaranteeing you I'm apologizing to them.
Do you really believe that he is going up to random police officers, taking them by
not
the hand, looking them in the eyes, saying, I'm so sorry?
Right.
When 5 years ago he was saying they are racist, anti-queer, defund the police.
Believe me, he will the best he can. Remember, the other guy took $1 billion away. And the other thing, just if you ask me if prostitution should be legal, go
Do
ahead.
You think prostitution should be legal, Brian?
No.
Yeah, you know
That's
what?
All I had to say.
That's
no,
I know, right?
I have it on my website. One would say, and one, he's going to make
it
legal.
And talking about safety, do you know what's safer than legalizing prostitution? Not becoming one in the first place.
True.
And if you decriminalize it, you're basically telling young girls, yeah, it's safer now.
Right.
Why not?
So we could do this whole segment on this, but you didn't stop here.
No.
Tim Walz is the guy that keeps on giving.
That's right. Okay, so Kamala Harris made it clear in her book that she was not happy with Tim Walz's debate performance because she thought that he was too nice to J.D. Vance. So Tim Walz was asked, you know, was he offended by this? His response, no, Kamala, you're right. I was bad.
I warned them. My Minnesota nice thing is, if somebody's being nice to me, I'll be nice to
You're
them.
You're talking about the debate with J.D. Vance, where
yeah, these people have seen me debate. I know my subject. I'm pretty good at it. I think in the moment we were in preparing for that, and quite honestly, we did not prepare for him to be more cordial. The expectation was that he would do the false attacks and do some of that, and they didn't. So I'll give them this. They were well prepared.
He went on to say, I nodded my head because I do the teacher thing where I nod. You know, they always teach teachers. This is a whole semester on just nodding.
I know, right?
Teacher.
So you go like this with your head. Right. That's the course.
So Carly, this is the thing amazing. He goes, I told her when she picked me, I'm not a good debater. It's like saying, like, I'll play defense for you, but I kicked the ball on my own goal. Yeah. So if you want me on your team, you can do that.
You know what I picked up on this? That he has an obsession with talking about mean and nice. Like, he says he's Minnesota nice, but remember that big speech that he made where he was like, Democrats need to become more mean.
Right.
So what is it with him and talking about those behavioral characteristics?
It just shows you her first decision was her worst decision, and it probably would have been only worse from there.
Yes.
But I thought that would be enough. But you said, no, Brian,
you told
me three.
There is another media moment that mattered, and it has to do with the New Jersey gubernatorial race, which is getting so much attention because Jack Cittarelli does appear to be closing the gap with Mikey Sherrill. And it may be because of moments like this that are getting renewed attention this week. Watch.
Well, did you make $7 million in stock trades at all? Or?
I don't believe I did, but I'd have to go see what that was alluding to again, what kind of came from.
It was a report in the
No, I know it's from Newsmax, which again.
And then another one in the Washington Free Beacon, which is a conservative leaning platform, but they said you had increased from between 733,209 to over 4 million in 2019, and then between 4 million to 13 million in 2024. So that's where they got the 7 million increase.
Just the average of the two average, broad they average categories. Out that. Yeah. Yeah. Look, I both my husband and I come from very middle class families.
She's doing insider stock. It looks like this is insider stock trading. She's trading. These are evidently defense stocks. And
well,
she's on.
You know what I was getting? I was thinking that gave me Kamala Harris.
Absolutely.
Because you're on the edge of your seat, like, Kit, will you get through this moment?
Right.
And so she doesn't know if she made $7 million, neither do I. But her net worth is estimated between $9 and $14 million right now. So we know she can pay for the cost of energy in New Jersey.
Absolutely. Or at least get close.
Yeah.
At least a payment plan that's affordable.
Yeah.
And you're from New Jersey. So
I
you
am.
Feel you're
Thank
laughing
you.
Through
yes.
your pain.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Carly, thanks so much.
It was fun.
It's hard narrowing down to just three. There's so much
I now have to unplug all the devices.
If you don't mind, give them back.
Okay, fine.
For
yes. It's like
contestant.
A library book.
It's absolutely. She has no idea what a VCR is. Meanwhile, next, the School of Hard Knocks founder James Damoulian is here with the keys to success that he's learned from the wealthiest people in the world.
Are you a millionaire?
I'm not a millionaire, but according to Forbes, I'm a billionaire.
So was the sacrifice worth it to become a billionaire?
It wasn't a sacrifice.
Why not?
The journey is the reward.
Hey, everybody, fall is back.
What have you learned from being in Congress?
I think what would shock people here is that most members are afraid. They're afraid of criticism. Haters gonna hate, man.
What's the best advice you would give to your younger self?
If a bird lands on the branch, does the bird trust the branch or does it trust its wings? And the clue, I've seen many birds land on branches, but what I've never seen is a branch break and a bird fall and die. Trust your wings.
Taking advice from somebody who hasn't done what you want to do is almost insanity. Like, listening to people who haven't done the thing that you want to do, that makes you crazy.
I love that laugh. The School of Hard Knocks, inspiring the next generation to take risks, and my generation too, at a time when employers, at least for the Gen Zers, are hesitant to hire them because we've seen some of the chaos on college campuses. We've been reporting it. We've seen this new push for this next generation for socialism. We've been recording it. But the co-founders of the School of Hard Knocks, they fly against that. All under the age of 25. They're doing something different, setting out to find the secrets to success. And we're joined, or I should say rejoined, when actually they joined us last year on the set. And now they're getting more attention and even bigger names, if you can believe it. Here are some of the interviews since we last met.
Who am I here with today?
Tom Brady.
What industry did you decide to pursue a career in?
Movies, which encompasses almost every industry.
Who am I here with today?
My name is Dr. Shaquille O'Neal.
Will Smith in the building.
Accountability is a word that I think we need to ingrain in all of us all the time. I always tell everybody, you have to get outside of your comfort zone.
Where did your work ethic come from?
I enjoy going for that level of perfection, and I surround myself with people that have that same care.
If you see somebody that's doing better than you, steal what they're doing. I stole Michael Jordan. I stole Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I stole Muhammad Ali, and I put it inside my brain, and I created me. I think for those who are not financially literate, learn this word, annuity.
Suffering is a gift. The universe teaches through difficulty. God teaches through suffering and hard times.
So, in just the last year, they have not suffered. They are growing on social media from 4 million, which was very impressive, to 17 million worldwide, changing the way to learning their way along the way, financial literacy, getting a lot of career guidance, not only for them, but for all of you that are nice enough to click and watch them on various platforms. One of the co-founders of the School of Hard Knocks rejoins us, James Damoulian. James, great to see you.
It's great to be back here.
What are your thoughts seeing yourself with everyone from Shaq to Tom Cruise to Will Smith?
It's just a testament that consistency really is everything. I mean, I go back to the days we talked about it the last time I was on here. We were at the University of Texas. You know, whenever I wasn't in class, I was spending hours downtown just trying to go find people, get them to talk to us. And it was just one after the other. We posted every single day for 4 years. You know, I'll go back to, you know, we have 17 million followers now. When we had posted 400 times on Instagram, we had 50 followers. How many people do you know would keep posting after having 400 posts and 50 followers? Not many, but we just had the vision and the instinct to keep going.
Did you change your approach?
Of course. You know, one of the best things that you can do is not reinvent the wheels. So we studied what worked in the business niche, you know, and we ended up landing on, you know, the interviews being that we could be the one to extract the wisdom from some of the most successful people in the world.
James, am I right? Because we had a chance to talk. You didn't do this to be famous. I think you have a legitimate curiosity to what the secrets to success are.
100%. And also, you know, I wasn't real wild about the way that financial literacy is taught in school. I think there's a big lack of it. So I think that, you know, I've always been a curious person. I've learned that, you know, some of the most successful people, they are lifelong learners. And I wanted to be the one that could, you know, be that bridge from everybody around the world to the most successful people in the world.
Well, you were doing ambush interviews, Mike Wallace style from the 1970s on 60 Minutes.
It was different.
Nobody... You just saw a guy or a woman in a nice car coming from a nice house. You go, I got to find out.
I got to figure out. How did you make your millions? How did you make it happen? And in doing that, it combines education and entertainment, and that creates virality.
And so now you're how old?
23 years old.
23 years old. How well are you doing?
Very well.
How well is your company doing?
Incredible. Yeah.
Millions?
Multi-million-dollar. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we will do over $6 million this year.
Parents must be so proud of you. Okay. You have Instagram, 7 million. We can put this up. Facebook, 3 million. TikTok, 5.4 million. But the Chinese are spying on you. YouTube, 1.6 million. And you've walked around. You've walked pretty impressive. But you have some universal things you want to share with the whole audience, right?
100%.
All right, so you said, I love this line. Money loves speeds.
Yes.
What do you mean?
Well, think about the richest people in the world. I've got a contact list full of billionaires. I guarantee you, if I text them, they're responding within 5 minutes. They're quick. They don't procrastinate. They take massive action. It's very important.
So the more important you are, it's not an excuse saying I'm so busy. If it matters, you'll get back to them quickly.
100%.
All right, it says if you can't sell, you can't scale. What do you mean?
The richest people in the world, Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates, they are still selling themselves to this day. So I know that we're talking about sales in regards to a product or a service, but I think the most important thing is the ability to sell yourself. Go back and watch my interviews where I am ambushing those people and they're trying to get away. Watch how I objection handle. It's because I'm selling myself to them. If you know how to sell, you'll never go broke.
And you can't fear rejection.
Never. Every no is one step closer to a yes. I live by that.
Mark Cuban's always said that if I could tell him to do one thing, it's to sell. Because
right.
If you have a great product, if you can't explain it, you can't sell
Listen, sales cures everything. And one more other thing is sell it first and then figure it out. Everybody thinks that they have to have this perfect product, this perfect service. Brother, you need revenue. You need cash flow. You need to go get some clients and customers. If you sell it, you get the cash flow, you'll figure it out.
Relationships open doors that money can't.
People will take you places that money can't. I mean, I am willing to say, we talked about college. If you have one good relationship, you're coming out of school, that will take you further than any college degree. I stand on that.
All right. Also, you mentioned focus creates fortune. So you know, people are too spread out. Got too many ideas. Get one.
Do you know what focus stands for? Follow one course until successful. You have to focus. I'm a firm believer in focus and, you know, It's very important.
Obsession like that you have beats talent.
You got to be maniacal about what you do. I mean, I think about any billionaire, whether it's Todd Graves with chicken fingers or Michael Rubin with Fanatics. I mean, these guys are obsessed. And same thing the way that I do in my interviews. It's like I really want to get this knowledge and create great content.
So your generation doesn't have the best reputation. I just wanted to take a look at this headline that came out this week, and it doesn't apply to you. And essentially the Gen Zers say hiring, this is a headline today, hiring managers, prize achievements, learning and work, today's youth value, pleasure and individuality. Is Gen Z unemployable? You're Gen Z. I know you personally don't fit that category, but to a lot of your peers, I'm not saying your friends, but fit that description?
I think they do. And you brought up, I think it was pleasure. What was the other thing?
Today's youth value pleasure and individuality.
Right. So when I think about that, I think about my generation. What's one of the biggest things that they struggle with? It's this concept of instant gratification. They think that it comes overnight because they see that person on social media with the Lamborghini. So social media can be a blessing and a curse. It depends what you're consuming, who you're listening to ultimately. So I think that there definitely is a lot of, our generation that does fit into that category. But we're also the generation where I think that we work a lot smarter and not harder. And it's because of, those iPhones that we have and the technology that we have in today's world.
Right, but you also should surround yourself to people like you.
You have to.
Right?
You absolutely have to.
Pick your friends.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. They always say, you hang around with five millionaires, you'll be the sixth. You hang around with five bums, you'll be the sixth bum.
Great to see you, James.
Brian, as always.
It's been fun tracking all your success.
Thank you,
and you can learn so much by following them on social media. By the way, follow me on social media. You don't mind, do you? James, someone else could follow us.
Let's go.
All right, you got me at Rumble, Instagram, X, and Facebook, and also on the Culper Club exclusive video there. Don't move.
It's everything.
And finally, before we go, get ready for a new season of What Made America Great only on Fox Nation. It comes out November 17th. I take you inside places and moments that shaped our history. I actually went to these places. Here's a sneak peek.
This right here is the bloodiest battlefield of the entire 18th century in all of North America.
And I believe we got our target.
By the time they got here, they were full of confidence. The type of fighting really turned the tide of the July 2nd battle.
I cannot believe I am inside the Cheyenne Mountain Complex.
The mysterious military installation.
After 9/11, we were focused on power projection. But now if we've got those multiple threats, a place like Cheyenne Mountain, getting this infrastructure ready to go is a top priority.
A date which will live in infamy.
Yep, that's just a little of it. You're going to love the other visits. You're going to feel even better about America. Sadly, that's it for us tonight. I want you to tune into my radio show every single day. We also stream 9 to noon, BrianKilmeadShow.com. Hopefully you're in a family of affiliates. And catch me on Fox and Friends in just a few hours. 3 hours of great guests and great anchors. As always, I have a final message. Stay within yourself and keep it right here on Fox News. Bring up the music.
It's Will Tang Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.